in the home 6010. Welcome to Fantasy Focus. Today's podcast is presented by Geico. You can watch us every weekday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on ESPN, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube feeds, as well as the ESPN app. And you can download Focus, Fantasy Focus, wherever you get your podcast. Field, Daniel, and Kyle here this morning. This has kind of become our Wednesday crew.
Has a little bit. It has a little bit. I'm not upset about it. I like doing this podcast with you guys.
It's been great. Lovely to have Kyle here as well. What's going on over there?
Nothing. Just hanging, loving this.
Kyle is the most reliable person you'll ever meet in your life. Like, Kyle being over there is like, you can always assume he's somewhere. Because he will be here every single day, probably about 2 hours before the show begins. Kyle is here every single day. I had something that came up this morning, and it was like around like 9:30, and I was like, oh, I can call Kyle or Daniel. It involved one of you bringing something from your home. And I was like, well, Kyle has been long gone from his house. Daniel and I, a little more like on time individuals.
Kyle gets up at like 5 o'clock and then gets in the studio at 5:45. Yeah, it's not fair.
Quite that early, but
the dog prepared. Rocky needs a little bit longer walk than just six o'clock. So we've got to have six, all the way to six. We have a very, very busy show today. We're going to talk about a couple of injury updates. The key one on Deebo Samuel. We'll talk about rankings. And then one thing we've really enjoyed has been some of our look ahead content over these past few Wednesdays, because we understand that at this time of the year, you either are playing for pride because you're likely out of your team's of your league's playoffs.
Yep.
Or maybe you're playing this week and you're doing so just because you're a good league mate, but you have no chance at the playoffs. Like, whatever it is, there's 1 week left in the regular season if you are using ESPN's default settings. Or I think probably the logical number of weeks to be playing your regular season, because if you go one more week and you have a 14, anyways, this is probably the last week for you. But we're going to look ahead because we want to serve those who are not as much focused on the 2021 season, but already looking ahead to 2022. We want to service those who are Texans and Jets and Jaguars fans, right? Because you're looking ahead to what's going to take place next season when perhaps better days are ahead.
Also, just because I'm in the running for a championship this year doesn't mean that I'm not ready to talk about next year already.
That's true.
We'll continue.
Well, remember a couple, was it the past 2 years? We've gone Monday, Tuesday, Thursday after Thanksgiving. We're back to a 5-day a week schedule, which people probably already noticed given that we have been on the air for each, both this Wednesday and last Wednesday after Thanksgiving. Enough particulars. Let's get to the injury updates. And we just have one of note right now, but it's really one team I think is worth bringing up. Kyle Shanahan, the 49ers head coach, says he is, quote, hoping that Deebo Samuel plays this weekend at Cincinnati. What we learned last week is that if he doesn't play, it's not like there's a guarantee that any wide receiver gets thrust into a much larger role. Last week was kind of a goofy week for the 49ers because of some weird things that happened within that game. There was the safety. There was a fake punt by the Seahawks, a game that kind of got off the rails. What turned out was that two things happened. It was the Elijah Mitchell and the George Kittle show. So there's really not a, hey, if Deebo misses again, you should be playing Juwan Jennings in your lineup this weekend. Juwan Jennings, I think, had a couple catches last week, but nothing significant, Daniel. But I do think what is perhaps more interesting right now is there are like no healthy running backs left for the 49ers.
Seriously.
It is absurd that if Deebo does play, I'm sure they'll want to be smart with him, but they may need to give him more running back touches because, in case you missed it, the 49ers have injuries to Elijah Mitchell. He's in the concussion protocol. Mm-hmm. They have, who, by the way, you're probably thinking to yourself, what happened? On Sunday, he left the game briefly, went back into the game after he cleared the concussion protocol at the time. Stefania is not here today, but she would remind you, just because you can clear concussion protocol, that's a lot of C's in a word, in a game on Sunday, many players have exhibited symptoms the day after as things have set on, which is the case with Elijah Mitchell. Jeff Wilson Jr. had his knee flare up on him. He had a knee issue in previous years and the shoulder injury this past off season. Beyond that, Trenton Cannon, who's been more of a special teamer, but still plays running back for them.
What about the guy they drafted in the third round,
Trey Sermon? Yeah, no, how about this? He is obviously on IR right now with an ankle injury, so he's out at least two more games. Trenton Cannon had a scary injury at the beginning of the game, left the game on the stretcher. He is, he's dealing with a concussion. He's obviously injured as well. So you've got four running backs right now that are not available for San Francisco.
Who's left?
Literally, Jamichael Hasty is the only one available. that's healthy at the moment.
Okay.
The team did work out three running backs yesterday. None of them I would consider sort of household names. Dexter Williams, former Packer for a little bit. He probably was the most well-known.
Dexter Williams. Was he also with the Chiefs?
He may have been with the Chiefs at one point. There was maybe. Dexter McCluster. He's put the Chiefs back.
Oh, I'm thinking of Dexter McCluster. Sorry.
Dexter McCluster. He was there when I was there in Kansas City.
That's my bad.
Is he worth an ad? 97% available.
Yeah, I put him on the waiver wire column because it's just sort of like, you have no idea. And totally. I think that the 49ers' actions today will be indicative of what's going to take place. Like, I assume one of those three will be added to the practice squad, those three running backs, unless we get word today that Elijah Mitchell is no longer in the concussion protocol. As we know, it could be a week, it could be a day, it could be 2 weeks, who knows? As Stefania will also always remind us, nonlinear, but like Daniel, Jermichael Hasty, like, who would have thought that for a week 14 running back consideration, right? It's crazy.
I love it. They really do need to get Debo back, though, for their offense, because we do not know what they're going to look like. I get that we had the huge game from George Kittle last week, but like, that's not something that you could see as being sustainable.
Yeah, I agree on that one. And so we'll keep an eye on Debo Samuel. We'll keep an eye on the 49ers running backs, but that is a major offensive storyline to monitor this week. They play the Bengals in Cincinnati this weekend. What a fun game. And who would have thought it'd be that high stakes coming into the season? We had optimism surrounding Cincinnati. They have probably overachieved relative to what I thought they were going to be this year, but a big game in week 14. I kind of like the slate this weekend. We got some interesting intra-conference matchups. We've got that one. We obviously Thursday night, Minnesota and Pittsburgh. We've got Buffalo and Tampa Bay. That's an important game, obviously. We've got a lot of interesting matchups this weekend.
Yeah, we do.
Including the Lions play the Broncos. That's a good one.
The Broncos. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. We're going to talk about some running backs.
Let's do that in a little bit. But I'm going to pass baton over to you.
Oh, hey,
Phil. Last week it worked. Let's do it again. Let's get to some rankings conversation, shall we?
Yeah, let's talk about Russell Wilson because here's the deal. It's week 14.
Mm-hmm.
It's the final week before you potentially make it into the playoffs.
Yep.
He has been QB 23 since returning, which is not good. Obviously looked a little bit better last week. But Houston ranks 11th versus fantasy quarterbacks. 17 fantasy points per game. They're not awful against the fantasy quarterback. I'm curious, where do you have Russell Wilson this week in what could be a must-win situation for your fantasy
team? I've got him at quarterback 13, Daniel, and I fear this could be a huge day for Russell Wilson on Sunday. And I'm not trying to be Matthew, and we have a lot of fun with that. You know he's going off. But I am playing against Russell Wilson in a league where if I win, I would be the division champ and I would have a first-round bye. If I don't, I'm in the playoffs, but I have to play in week 15, which... I want the path of least. I know, but I'm just saying. I want the path of least resistance, right?
Of course.
It's actually, this is why it means so much to me. Is it's the league that I've been playing in the longest? I think this is like the ninth year. College buddies.
Yeah.
Never won the league. Need to win this one. It's not so good when you're playing in a league with a bunch of your friends and are like, oh, this is the fantasy expert.
This is
and
the guy.
He's 0-8 in winning the title in a 12-team league. Let's see if we can turn our fortunes around.
I love that.
So some of this is anecdotal, and some of this is, right now, Houston has me a little bit concerned because they lose 31-0 this past week. And I wonder how much of that being just 11th against quarterbacks is indicative of them not being able to stop the run and just getting steamrolled consistently that quarterbacks don't need to throw like Carson Wentz last week, right? This was what I was talking about when I was making the decision between Kyler Murray and Carson Wentz last week, because like Wentz might throw the ball 20 times. I don't even know if he even had 20 attempts last week, Kyle. He probably stopped short of that. But the point is, I think that the numbers can be a little bit deceptive about Houston, who today is now waiving Zach Cunningham, at one point, a very productive linebacker for them.
22 attempts.
22. So, okay. Yeah, but not much more than 20. Yeah. Still a low volume game. And the reason why I mentioned this, Daniel, is like things are kind of unraveling a little bit right now in Houston. I know they're not a very good team, but like, back-to-back games of deactivating a respected veteran for a long time because of disciplinary issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're thinking to yourself, you know, it's like they got to sprint to the finish line right now, which you can't do in the NFL. You have to play all 17 games. But the difference between Seattle and Indianapolis is Seattle can't run the ball, right? So I think this is a better Russ game than my ranking indicates. I know this is more anecdotes and just sort of gut calls than it is stats. But Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett against a Houston defense that I think plays gritty and scrappy in the front seven. And they got some limitations at cornerback. And this could be a big Russ game.
I think
ranks will be adjusted, by the way.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay. How far up are you going to move him? Is it going to be inside the top 10?
Yeah.
You think so?
Top 10, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm interested in that.
Because
QB23, since he came back from that injury, they have not looked good for me. There's a part of it like, this could be that fix-me game that you're talking about, right?
It's the fix-me game. Seattle, may, you know, they have a very distant chance to make the playoffs. They're 4-8. 4-8 right now. Right. Yeah. But get to 5-8. Like, you never know. In the NFC, I believe, if you look at the teams that are ahead of them in the standings right now, like Minnesota could lose tomorrow night against Pittsburgh. You've got San Francisco who could lose to Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. You've got Carolina and I believe Atlanta who are playing each other this weekend. One of them's going to fall to 5-8. Washington could lose to Dallas and go to 6-7. Like a win from Seattle
would be a big deal.
Would be one game potentially out of the last playoff spot. And Pete Carroll, as much as some might think it's time for them to go the other direction, is always going to play things out. I'm optimistic on Russell Wilson, nervous for my own sake.
That's fair. That same division.
Yeah.
Kyler Murray field had an awesome week last week, 30.8 fantasy points, but he's taking on the Rams this week. Rams are a good defense, and here's, for me, I just want to say this, I have him at quarterback 6. I'm the lowest out of all of our rankers. You have him at quarterback 4. ESPN consensus is at 2.
Yeah.
Can I tell you really quickly why I have him at 6?
Please do, yeah.
He had 59 rushing yards and 2 rushing touchdowns. 17.9 of his points last week mm-hmm. came off of the run.
Right.
I don't think that's going to continue again this week. I think that I'm just hedging my bet a little bit. Still obviously a starter, but he's not going to get 18 points from running the football this week.
Maybe it's because we're deeper into the season and we have a lot more information. We have a lot more perspective on these teams, but I'm finding myself leaning a little bit more into gut calls than I do earlier in the year, because your gut calls early in the year are such gut calls, right?
But you know, yeah, because you've been able to access more information, and so your gut call has just more behind it.
More informed gut
yes,
call. And
exactly.
I think Monday night is an opportunity for the Arizona Cardinals, even if they shouldn't have to do this, but to stamp their case as the best team in the NFL.
Ooh.
And like I already believe them to be the best team in the NFL. And I know Packers fans, Kyle included, probably saying like, hey, we beat them on their own home turf without Devontae Adams,
sure
like
did.
Short week on the road, et cetera, et cetera. That being said, like Arizona has been awesome, basically start to finish this year with one dud. That was against Carolina, and that was without Kyler Murray. They went on Monday night. They all but clinched the NFC West, a division that was supposed to be 4 teams to the bitter end, and Arizona might have been the worst. If they win on Monday night, they would then be 3 games up on Arizona and effectively 4 because they would have swept, Los Angeles. They would have swept Los Angeles with 4 weeks left. They would have had to lose every game, and the Rams would have to win every game for them to not win the division. That ain't happening, right? Like, so anyways, I think Kyler's big night on Monday night. I do. And you're right that 17 points off of rushing yards, it's hard to predict week over week. But the 10 was an important number for me. The fact that he got 10, that was the most of the season, was big.
Yep.
And we know he can, at the goal line, they can run any sort of number of plays. And James Conner probably is the best bet for a goal line carry. But one of those runs was a short one from Kyler on this past Sunday. Weather was an issue this past weekend, so they were not throwing it very much, which is why so much of his production came on the ground in terms of overall fantasy points. But I think there's a chance that we see a big night from Kyler one more time. And you're right, this Rams defense is good, but like I don't think the numbers are overwhelming in terms of them slowing down opposing quarterbacks.
That's fair.
But not like they're, I don't know who number one, I'm assuming it's the Bills or the Patriots, maybe the
Bills.
Yeah. Bills, yeah, but they're not like, well, especially after this past week, it's probably the Bills, right? Because Mac Jones had 0.46 points. But like, they're not a total stay away, which I think is worth noting right now.
Totally. You're still starting Kyler Murray 100%.
I have a lot of confidence, though. I think it's a big Kyler night on Monday. I really do.
Let me ask you really quickly. You talked about James Conner. Do we have any updates on Chase Edmonds as to when he could potentially be coming back for this team?
He's eligible as soon as this week. And we'll probably find out today or tomorrow because they play on Monday. So they have the extra day of practice, which would mean that they probably don't have to open up the window until tomorrow. I'm assuming they're practicing today. Most teams do.
Sure.
Even when they play on Monday night. I think we'll find out something today. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him on Monday night. That being said, like if they have like James Conner, I think they're no worse for the wear, right? He's been so good filling in for Chase Edmonds in recent weeks. He has just been unbelievable all season. One of the best values made in the NFL this year.
100%. Let's talk about some other running backs here. Field. The Denver Broncos are taking on the Detroit Lions.
They are.
Go ahead.
I have no idea on Melvin Gordon before you even asked the question. Okay. So my ranks currently are reflective of him playing.
Okay.
So not him sitting out.
Playing, but you have him right now, Melvin Gordon, you have at 26. Yeah. ESPN consensus at 25. Javonte Williams, consensus 15. You've got him at 12. You just watch Alexander Mattison light up the Lions. You think the same thing is in line for Javonte Williams here?
Yes, and especially so, obviously, if Melvin Gordon does not play. But even if he does play, like, I think that there's a chance that Melvin Gordon, if he plays, is like a 40% of the total running back touches to 60% for Javonte Williams. The reason why the number is not 50-50 is because he's probably not 100%, right? Yeah. He didn't practice this past week. He's got a hip injury. Those are never fun. Here's what I will say, though, is so frequently we see this in fantasy football. Well, there's something that us, the fans and the analysts and the people that play, want to see happen that seems so logical, mm-hmm. right? That just doesn't happen that frequently, right? So probably the best example this year is, why are the Falcons not throwing the ball 20 times a game to Kyle Pitts? Not literally 20, but let's call it 8 times a game, right? Why is he getting so few red zone targets? Easier in practice or in theory than they are in execution. And I wonder if the idea of Javonte Williams just taking over this job the rest of the way, all to himself, one of those things where an old school coach in Vic Fangio and an old school offensive coordinator in Pat Shurmur would be mindful of, like, the human side of this. That, like, if you dress Melvin Gordon, you don't dress him to just sit there and have fun on the sidelines and, you know, like, enjoy the scenery of Denver in, you know, on December to Sunday, right? Or Sunday in December. Like, I think you have to play him a decent amount. So if Javonte Williams, though, is the only back available for Denver on Sunday, I might rank him third, second, amongst running backs.
He would easily be top five for me against that Lions
team. No Jonathan Taylor this week, by the way. Remind you, there's no Jonathan Taylor this week. There are 4 teams on a bye in total. So, like, the guy, we don't know on Alvin Kamara.
Nope.
Dalvin Cook's not playing Thursday night, we don't think. Like, maybe a pass catcher like Austin Eckler has a better chance, but there's not.
Not many.
Christian McCaffrey's out right now. Like, there's not that cheat code running back that, like, you kind of have to throw to the top of your running back ranks by default.
He is the cheat code running back because he's playing the Detroit Lions.
Well, those are your words, not mine. I don't besmirch the Lions run defense like you do.
I love the Detroit Lions, but they can be run against Field Yates.
Yes, they sure can. So I do think, though, that, like, if Javonte, I mean, not that it, like, if you have him, you're playing him. Yes. I just think that, like, if Melvin Gordon hits again, like, it's going to be really tough for me to not throw him all the way inside my top five.
Yeah.
And maybe closer to one.
If Melvin Gordon plays, he's still a flex play for you, though.
I'm going to keep it as a flex play only because their splits were so even when they were playing. Yep. And we see this all the time. Like, we want to escalate young players faster, accelerate them faster than coaches do. And there might be some benefit in their eyes to not utilizing Javonte Williams every single snap of every single game, whether Melvin Gordon is available or not.
Okay. Field Yates. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some Packers.
Yeah,
Kyle, you can get in on this too. Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. I want to say some things right now. Aaron Jones, been a little bit banged up the last couple weeks.
Yep.
Right now, ESPN consensus is 9. A.J. Dillon right now is 30.
Yeah.
Are we too far apart between these two running backs?
We are, and I'm as guilty of it as anybody, to be honest with you. Because the numbers bear it out. Like, I wish I'd thought of this yesterday when we were doing the pre-planning for this show. Like, we should do a blind resume over the past month when these guys have both been on the field, because there was a game, obviously, that Aaron Jones missed. But, like, you know what? We don't have a blind resume, but we do have Kyle Sapi here now. So, Kyle, can you pull Aaron Jones and just read aloud his total touches or carries, whichever is most easy to pull up? Let's go to carries first. Over the past 4 games that Aaron Jones has played.
Past 4 games, carries for Aaron Jones in reverse order. So, starting with the oldest, 15, 12, 7, 10.
15, 12, 7, and 10. Is there a way to pull in those same games what A.J. Dillon was doing? Or
16, 8, 21, and 20. Right. Carries.
Wow.
Crazy. So, and is one of those games for A.J. Dillon the game that Aaron Jones missed, or no? Or are those the same weeks?
Those are the same weeks. The game Aaron Jones missed was Minnesota.
Wow. And he had the big day, obviously.
11 and...
But he had all those catches. Yeah. Wow.
AJ Dillon, hear that?
Like, he's carrying the ball more than AJ Aaron Jones over the past month. Yes, a ton more. That's like a lot more. He's really good, right? I'm old enough to remember when Brian Gutekunst, their GM, was an idiot. They had no idea what he was doing for drafting a second round running back, who happens to be a really good player, by the way, right?
He also took Jordan Love. So, I mean,
let's revisit. We'll have to revisit that conversation like 9 years from now, right?
Agreed.
But yeah, so it should be much closer. Aaron Jones, also, as we know, has a nose for the end zone, but as we've talked about on this show, he's this year, when he hasn't scored a touchdown, I bet Kyle could pull a number, like what his average fantasy points are when not scoring a touchdown. And it's probably like a little lower than you might expect it to be. So along those lines, like if you're playing Aaron Jones this week as a clear-cut edge over A.J. Dillon, part of what you're doing is saying, I expect him to score at least once against Chicago, which, by the way, could happen.
Yes.
Could happen, but they should be much closer. That's an error on my part to not have them closer, and I'm going to adjust. I have a couple of notes I have to adjust. Russell Wilson first, the Packers running backs. Let me ask you one question.
Yeah, bring it.
Why are we watching the Packers and the Bears on Sunday Night Football?
Because of the Packers.
Okay, that's your opinion.
Yeah.
Okay, come on, seriously. Like, take your hat off here for a second. Take your Packers cheesehead cap off.
Yep.
Your cheesehead. I don't know why I call it a cheesehead cap. Take your cheesehead off for
take
a second.
Your cheesehead cap off.
Like, aren't there more fun games this weekend?
Yes.
There's seven better, at least.
Okay, right. Like, I was talking about how there's kind of an interesting slate this weekend. Like, I would love to see the Bengals and the 49ers on Sunday Night Football this weekend.
Love that.
Now, I don't know who's playing in Sunday Night Football in week 15, so maybe one of those teams is already playing on Sunday night, but like Ravens Browns again on Sunday night, like I'd be down for that. Wouldn't you? Like
more than Bears Packers.
Yeah. How about the Browns playing back-to-back games against the Ravens? You see that?
That's crazy.
So the Browns go Ravens by Ravens again. That's interesting right there.
8.4 points per game for Aaron Jones in games in which he doesn't score. Sunday Night Football next week, Saints at Bucks.
Okay.
A little better.
Yeah.
Kind of.
We'll see. We'll see. Yeah. Interesting. I guess I'm going to say the same thing that Mikhail is. It's Tom Brady, right? Like you put Tom Brady in prime time, people are going to watch.
And Taysom Hill. I'll be watching. What's going to happen with Taysom Hill, right?
Yeah.
You never know. About Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. All right. Let's talk about some Cowboys running backs.
Yeah. Where this one, I wonder, I think the split might be appropriate here.
So last 3 weeks.
Yep.
Tony Pollard, 32 touches. 41.2 fantasy points. That includes a return touchdown
right.
that he had.
Right.
So I had 6 points there. Ezekiel Elliott, 45 touches, 36.4 fantasy points. So Zeke has 13 more touches than him. A little bit less efficient, but Zeke is still the guy in this offense. That's
he's
what I think away from it.
And he's getting the carries that I think matter the most. Like last week, Tony Pollard converts a 58-yard rushing touchdown, right? Which I'm not sure right now Zeke is capable of, unless there's like the parting of the Red Sea here. Like I'm not trying to be unkind, but he hasn't had a 20-yard touch in over a month.
Yeah.
Tony Pollard's the much better bet for a long touchdown. We just know that like when we're doing our rankings in fantasy, we are basing them off of the things that are most likely to happen in the course of any football game. And it's much more likely for a player that gets 20 touches to and five of them in the red zone and maybe three of them from the 5-yard line and in to score a touchdown, which is probably the difference maker between Zeke and Tony Pollard. But it has been a weird year in general for Zeke. Like we're going to talk about our top 50, you know, some of the guys that were drafted in the top 50 this year and what it means going forward. Like, I don't know where we end up.
Kyle and I had that conversation. Yeah,
Is Zeke next year? Like, what's your early thought on Zeke?
Probably low end, maybe low end top 10.
Yeah, really interesting. And at some point, the Cowboys are going to have to make a decision on some key players on their roster. And I think Zeke could be one of them. So I'm still confident that like Zeke deserves to be ranked higher amongst the two Cowboys running backs. And I think what I've realized more and more and more in life, and I was thinking about this morning, not to get on a tangent, but this morning there was news that Jamal Adams is going to miss the rest of the year because he tore his labrum. He's the Seahawks safety. And a lot of the instant analysis was, wow, the trade they made to give up two first-round picks for Jamal Adams was extremely dumb. And normally when that stuff happens, I'm like, was it? And then I'm like, you know what? In term, like at the time of the trade, I felt it was heavy-handed by Seattle. It's proven to be much worse than I thought. Process looked bad. Results look worse. So I use that as an example to describe that like it may be that Tony Pollard outscores Zeke on Sunday against the Washington football team. It may be. But I still think that like if you told me one of them gets 20 total opportunities on Sunday, even if Pollard's a more explosive player, like I'm expecting it to be Zeke and I'm expecting there to be an opportunity for him to pound one in from the 3-yard line or in.
100%. 100% Ezekiel Elliott is the goal line guy. Tony Pollard is enticing because when he breaks off those big runs, he is quick. He is fast. He is explosive.
He's a really good player.
He's fun to be able to watch, but he's not Ezekiel Elliott. So you're right. I definitely believe he has weeks where he will outscore Zeke. It could be one of these weeks, especially with Zeke being banged up, but he is their guy.
How about this? This is kind of an interesting prop right here from Kyle. Who scores more points this weekend, the Cowboys backfield or the Packers backfield?
Cowboys taking on the Washington football team. Yeah. Packers taking on Bears.
I'm going the Packers here just because I think there's a pretty good case that like over the past 5 weeks now, Washington's defense has just locked up opposing running attacks, right?
Is this Washington defense what we thought they were
like
2.5 months ago?
Crazy, right? And they've done it largely without Chase Young. Montez Sweat, another great pass rusher for them, has not been available.
Yep.
The game is not played on paper, my friends.
I think I would also take the Packers, just because the Cowboys have such a good quarterback and so many good receivers, and obviously the Packers just devoid of talent in both of those places.
Hey. He gets one win from his Lions, and this is what we have to
start
to
talk. There's no Amon-Ra St. Brown on the.
That's right.
There's an Equanimeous St. Brown, but there's no Amon-Ra, right?
Let's talk about some pass catchers here. Field, I'm curious about this one. Hollywood Brown. We just talked about Ravens Browns. Three straight weeks, Marquise Brown has finished outside the top 25. It has been a little bit rough there. Still a guy that we feel like needs to be started. Where does Hollywood Brown fall for you this week?
I've got him at wide receiver 12, but one thing that's weird is he's no longer a consistent deep threat for Baltimore, which I don't know if that correlates to some of the recent struggles they've had offensively. The buzzword surrounding the Baltimore Ravens is how do they counter when teams call a zero blitz, which for those that aren't fluent in football jargon, basically it means that you are willing to bring extra rushers and play cover zero on the back end, which means you're man-to-man with no safety over the top. So the numbers advantage you have is at the line of scrimmage. The numbers disadvantage you have is that if one of your wide receivers, one of your opponent's wide receivers beat you, it could be a 70-yard touchdown. They're off to the races.
So you're telling me that cover zero means there's no safeties over top. Cover one means there's one safety over top. Cover two means there's two safety over top.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Right. Now, but it gets weird because in cover three, there's not three safeties over the top. It refers to the number of deep defenders.
Gotcha.
But most frequently when it's cover one, it is a safety because cover three, the two cornerbacks drop
out and one of the
yeah, gotcha. And then cover four, then cover.
Yeah, I played Madden before, Field.
You know,
I know
that's
yeah,
right.
I know
you
know,
but
words.
Then it gets weird when you get to cover five because cover five is when you play with two safeties deep, but you play man to man. Underneath, whereas cover
everything.
Two, it's a zone underneath.
Yeah,
we're
fair.
Getting way too into the weeds.
Deep.
Like Dan Orlovsky and Marcus Spears are shook right now from all of our football analysis. They're like, come on now, let us handle that kind of smart talk on NFL Live.
Hey, you
instead.
Played in college.
Yeah, I wasn't very good though, let's be honest. I almost exclusively just watch from the bench. But
so let's talk about this because Hollywood Brown's ADOT, you were talking about his, it's very different from the beginning of the year.
This is a great stat from Kyle. Over the first seven games, 15.2 yards down the field is his average depth of target. Over the past four games, 7.8 yards. Like,
that's
tells
half.
You everything you need to know. Half, yeah. So he's got half as many upper or half the upside, I suppose, on a per target basis. It just feels to me like I don't know if this is a sample size thing. I don't know if things were just rolling really well early in the year. I don't know if it's the fact that their offensive line has endured even more injuries, but the opportunities for Hollywood Brown to go 5 for 119 in the touchdown have been limited over the past month. But I still have him at wide receiver 12 because I still believe in this offense. I do think there's a little bit of a gut check coming for Baltimore. A couple of teams that I think are on gut check notice this week. Like I think Baltimore, I think Buffalo, they're both of them are like on gut check weeks. Like, you know what? Coming off of disappointing losses.
Yeah.
Can't let those manifest into another loss this week. If they do, we could be in trouble. Not in trouble. We could have a different outlook compared to where we were a month ago when Baltimore, you know, obviously Baltimore was the number one seed in the AFC as recently as last week. So both teams I'm patient, not panicking on. And I think Marquise Brown sort of fits into that construct.
Right, he needs to get back on track though. Him and Hollywood need to get back on track for what this is.
Yep.
Let's talk about Brandon Cooks. We talked about Russell Wilson a little bit earlier. Obviously, the Texans taking on the Seahawks, who are top 10 against fantasy wide receivers this year. He's not finished a week better than wide receiver 24 since week 8,
yeah.
Field Yates. ESPN consensus is 30. You actually have him at 38. You are the lowest. It has been hard to have confidence in Brandon Cooks. Do you feel any better? It doesn't seem like it from your ranking this week.
No, I mean, this dovetails with the conversations we were having earlier in the week about how, like, I want to be out of the business if I can of Brandon Cooks, not because of him, the player, but because of the situation right now. So the Texans are most likely going to have to start Davis Mills on Sunday against Seattle. If you were to look at their best offensive players right now, I think Brandon Cooks would probably be the answer for the best offensive player they have.
Mm-hmm.
Or Laremy Tunsil, their left tackle. He's out still. Tyrod Taylor, probably the third best player they have. He's unlikely to play on Sunday, which leaves Davis Mills, who...
That's good for my fantasy team.
It's good, yeah. Davis Mills, who I will tell you this, like, I think in a different circumstance, with more talent... Might look okay. Right now, it looks bad, though. Right now, it looks like a really...
Pretty much all of the Texans look bad. It's not. That's not just on Davis
Maybe
Mills.
A year or two. By the way, this is semi by design, right? Like, I don't want to just sound like a water carrier, but like Nick Caserio signed up for something that he knew. If you expected anybody to go in there and turn this around in a year, then you are chasing a ghost, right? 100%. Like you have to get worse to get better.
Lions
in Houston
are in the same boat as the Texans. I feel like we know that it was going to be a tough year.
It's going to be a tough couple of years probably in both of those cases in terms of like the long-term aspirations of the franchise, but it makes very little sense for me in the NFL to chase the middle, right? Like chasing the middle is where you get yourself in trouble. We see it all the time in the NBA. We don't see it as frequent in the NFL, but you don't want to be chasing the middle right now. And Houston is not chasing the middle. They understand what they are. And so I just, like, it wouldn't surprise me if they score like 8 points on Sunday.
This is kind of a tough question on the spot field, but I think even last year when the Jets were bad, at least they had a guy, Jamison Crowder, that was still a pretty fantasy relevant, you know, top 30, top 25 guy. It feels like you can't play anyone from the Texans for the rest of the season in fantasy, at least with confidence, when we've been saying that for a while now. Yeah. But like, is there a single Texan going into the playoffs that you're like, I hope I can count on these guys?
The difference for Jamison Crowder, by the way, is that like, that's the beauty of being a slot receiver.
Yeah.
Right? You can get 7 catches for 62 yards. And you're like, I live with that every day of the week, right? Uh-huh. Whereas Brandon Cooks is a vertical threat that like, he'll get some of his shots in the intermediate or short passing game, but a lot of stuff down the field as well. His target share is big. He's got the 4th highest target share in the NFL. That being said, like, I just have so little confidence in this offense and others right now that I would be fading if I could.
100%. 100% with you there. Let's talk about the Rams taking on the Cardinals. We got 2 wide receivers here that we both like. Obviously, Cooper Kupp is a must start, but both Van Jefferson and OBJ are flex plays for us. And here's a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Week 12 at Green Bay, all 3 had 80 yards and 18 plus fantasy points. Week 13, all 3 of them got in the end zone. Is this an offense that can sustain 3 fantasy viable wide receivers heading into the playoffs when you can't have a dud when you're starting a guy that's been a backup most of the year in either OBJ or Van Jefferson?
They have the upside that each of them will be ranked inside my top 30 every single week. And more specifically, OBJ and Van Jefferson will likely be ranked inside my top 30 every single week. And the reason is because we've seen.
Thank you for saying that. Cooper Kupp also, though, will be
Cooper
top 30.
Cooper Kupp, believe it or not, will also crack the top 30 for me, just inside the top 30, as a matter of fact. But the good for Van Jefferson is that he's super fast and he gets a ton of targets down the field. The bad is that he gets a ton of targets down the field.
Yep.
He's only caught 50% of his targets since OBJ showed up, but that's the yo-yo side of this, right? Is that like you might get 15 fantasy points from Van Jefferson. You might also get 5 fantasy points from Van Jefferson. I truly believe this. OBJ, who was saved by a touchdown last week, I think it was 2 for 28 in a touchdown.
Yes.
I think when opportunity knocks, they're going to give him a chance to get some more scores. Like, I think they want this. I think they want him to feel like he's an important part of their offense because they believe that at some point when the rubber meets the road, they're going to need him to be a big part of their offense. So that's why I have him inside my top 30 that, like, any given week, Stafford can throw for 325 yards, 3 touchdowns. Cooper Kupp might get 125 and a touchdown.
And a touchdown or 2.
But that still leaves 200 yards and a couple of touchdowns left over for others. And with a good but not dominant tight end in Tyler Higbee, these 2 wide receivers, the next players up.
Yeah, they're taking on Arizona this week. 12th best against fantasy wide receivers.
They've been good.
But Matthew Stafford in that offense, man. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, now or never for LA. Like I said, if they don't win that game on Monday night, you're a wild card. You start positioning yourself for the top wild card in the NFC. If they do win, then the division is still in play. It's still a long shot. I mean, not a long shot. They would be a game back. It's a longer shot,
yes,
but still a shot.
Let's talk on the other side of that game field. DeAndre Hopkins. Boy, oh boy, if you have been rostering DeAndre Hopkins all year long, you have been waiting for him to come back. I don't know, field. Like, the way that I want to tee this question up is so difficult. What is your confidence level in superstar wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins with superstar quarterback Kyler Murray heading into week 14, understanding that they just pass the ball to so many different people in that offense? Does he even make your top 20? Can I say that?
He is my 20th ranked wide receiver.
So he barely makes your top 20, but he's still a top 20 guy.
Because Matthew was on the scent here early, is that like he's a touchdown dependent wide receiver too. He just keeps scoring touchdowns. Nearly 1 in 6 targets for DeAndre Hopkins this year has gone for a score, which at some point that's not going to actually keep up, right? I mean, 12 targets per game is reasonable for DeAndre Hopkins. 2 touchdowns per game, which would be 1 in 6, is not reasonable for DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah.
So what I'm banking on for Hop is that he'll play more on Monday night than he did this past week because he's getting healthier. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to score points. I think this is going to be, can you imagine like a greater antithesis in terms of like atmosphere and everything else on Monday night? We go from the blustering winds of Buffalo, New York to the Bermuda grass of Arizona, so like the best playing surface. Like, I'm not saying that Buffalo is not a great, I love Buffalo. I love the playing surface there, but just like, if you ever ask anybody, like, what's the perfect place to play an NFL game? The Cardinal Stadium always comes up. It's just like pristine.
Yeah.
It's like the climate out there, right? It's always excellent. So different. And then two teams that are just so different as well than the Bills and the Patriots. This was gonna be a lot of fun, but I do have enough confidence in DeAndre Hopkins that I have him as a wide receiver two, literally the last wide receiver two in my 10 team ranks. But that being said, like he has to get healthier. Like as much as I think this team is legit, Arizona, like they need him to be an effective part of their offense weekly for them to reach what the apex is. Like, I don't think DeAndre Hopkins being not a role player, but being a solid number one wide receiver is good enough for them to win the Super Bowl this year. They need him to be a legit wide receiver one. And I think that time could come just a little bit later in the season when I think he's even healthier and in a better matchup, because this Rams defense, even if DeAndre Hopkins is not shadowed by Jalen Ramsey, and I'm no Mike Clay, but I don't think that'll be the case, as Mike has explained in the past. Like, I still think it's a tough matchup, right?
Yes.
Like, they've got good players everywhere does Los Angeles on defense. So pass rush is very good. Like, they could make things difficult for Kyler on Monday night. I still like Kyler. I still like DeAndre Hopkins enough to have him as a starter, just a little bit less. I mean, back in the day, it'd be like, is he one or two overall amongst wide receivers? That is not the point we're at right now.
Falling just a little bit now.
Just a little bit for Nuke.
Kyle, what you got?
You're talking a touchdown dependent DeAndre Hopkins. How do you decide between him and a guy like Elijah Moore or Hunter Renfrow? Guys, you've got them ranked around where the volume is so steady, but the touchdown equity just isn't there. I'm assuming there's no shortage of people that are going to have to decide between a guy like Hopkins that they invested in huge in the summer, and then a guy like Renfrow that they might have picked up a month ago.
Yeah, I think the answer is pretty obvious in PPR.
Yeah.
Hunter Renfrow.
Got to go the other way.
Yeah, and I know that sounds crazy, right?
But that's hard to click.
Right now, with the way that Nuke has been playing out, like, if that regression happens, again, this is week 14. If this was week 8 and we were still in a different spot, my mind would be in a different place. It all depends on where you're at,
yeah,
what your record is, how you need to, if you need to get win to get into the playoffs. But like, that's, I would look at it from that perspective of what does my team need? What is Hopkins' ceiling in this game?
Oh, I mean, I think that's the hard part.
And a touchdown.
Yeah,
yes, and
yeah, probably like 7 old, for 100 and then a touchdown,
old
right?
Nuke.
That's that's the scary part, is that if you play Hunter Renfrow, the ceiling's probably not 7 for 100 and a touchdown,
but
right?
7 for 90 is almost, it feels like a lock.
Yeah, it does. So I think it probably comes down to what you need. Yeah. Like, if you're playing in a league where, you know, it's final week of the regular season, and like, the only way you get in is if you win, or the only way that you get in is with like a big scoring advantage over an opponent, like some leagues, reserve the last playoff spot. For, let's say there's four teams that make the playoffs, or let's say it's six teams that make the playoffs. The top five records make it in, and the sixth playoff spot goes to the team amongst the remaining squads that has the highest point total for this season. It feels like a more equitable way to avoid somebody who just gets screwed with points against all year, right?
I agree with that. I like that a lot.
Our Gasco League, which is a league that Daniel and I play in with Keith, we have a crazy final week this week. I think there's, if I'm not mistaken, there's five of us that are 7-6 or 6-7.
There's so much right in the middle.
And there's only three spots left. And it's going to be a points thing, because one of us, even if it's possible a team goes 6-7. How many weeks have we been in? This is the 14th week. Yeah, 6-8. Sorry, I'm talking my brain into a pretzel. Anyways, one of us could be 6-8 and make the playoffs over a team that goes 7-7.
Yes.
I got that.
Because of points.
Because of points, yeah. Yes. Which I think is a good rule, just generally speaking. I get it if you only have four teams that make the playoffs. But generally speaking, I do think that's a good rule to follow. Is like, if you can reserve the final playoff spot in your league for the team that has the highest scoring team for the year, other than the teams that are already locked into the playoffs, I think that's a good rule to follow.
I like that too. All right, Phil, let's talk about the top 50 in ADP this year coming into this season and what we kind of look like, well, the look ahead for them, I guess, less for 2022.
Let's do it.
Yep. The 2022 look ahead is brought to you by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or car insurance. Visit geico.com today. My first question, right off the bat, CMC was number one this year. We saw he got hurt. Is CMC going to be a clear-cut number one overall pick next year for you?
My guess is no. My guess right now is that there are two players that will vie for the number one overall player in 2022 pre-draft rankings.
I have two as well.
I'm assuming it'll be Jonathan Taylor and Derrick Henry.
That's exactly who mine
are. And I think that's kind of a cold take. Like, I think we all kind of agree. I think Jonathan Taylor probably gets the edge unless one thing happens, which is Derrick Henry returns this year at some point, even if it's for a game in the playoffs. But like, let's say he comes back, even if it's just one game. If he comes back for a game, even if Tennessee loses it, like if he goes for 125 yards and a touchdown, you're like, oh, wait.
Great.
He's still Derrick Henry.
He's still Derrick Henry.
So I think it's one of those two players.
Yep.
Is the top overall pick in fantasy. But let's call those two like sort of the dynamic duo, the very top of boards. I think Christian McCaffrey, for me, will be in that next cluster of players because as much as it's easy to right now be super down on CMC because of the way that his season has unfolded, it's not like he's the only running back that's been hurt, right? Alvin Kamara is in danger of missing his fifth straight game right now. Dalvin Cook's going to miss probably his third game and could miss more after this week. I think there's not a guarantee he'll be back in week 15. So CMC has been more devastating because of the fact that we are so passionate about him being the number one player in fantasy this year. But I think that like there's a chance next year, if CMC plays 14 games out of 17, he could easily be the running back one. I mean, again, you look at his numbers when he did play this year, they were off the charts. It's just a matter of staying healthy.
Let me tell you this. I think my number three would probably be Dalvin Cook. I think that's about where he was, give or take, this year anyways. Okay. Because of the backup situation, I totally hear you. But the idea that when Cook goes out, I have a guy who's a top five running back that I can fill in. When CMC goes out, I don't have a guy in that backfield that I can fill in for a top five. Now, that's an easy thing for me to say here in December. Let's see what happens once I get, you know, you put your money where your mouth is. But there's a part of me that because CMC doesn't have that insurance back that's quite as valuable as Dalvin Cook, I like him just a little bit more because if I took him that early, I would absolutely be grabbing Alexander Mattison somewhere else in the draft.
But I think some of the players that come to mind, if we establish like that first tier is two players, Jonathan Taylor and Derrick Henry, the next group of guys that comes to mind for me is probably, and this is not in a perfect order, but Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, Alvin Kamara, who are the leftovers from this past year. Mm-hmm. And then I think
there's four
Austin Eckler.
Five more.
Austin Eckler comes to mind for me, and Joe Mixon comes to mind for me.
Yep.
And then I think you say sort of goodbye to Zeke in that very top tier of running backs. And then I think it's a question mark about how you rank the likes of, and Saquon Barkley, by the way, also goodbye from that very top tier. And then I think, and by the way, you're noticing we're only talking about running backs because
Saquon has gone from both of those top two tiers in my
opinion. Yeah, he's gone, right. He's gone from like this conversation, unfortunately, right? So, yeah, those would be my players. Like that next tier, CMC, Dalvin Cook, Alvin Kamara, plus Joe Mixon, plus Austin Eckler. Yeah, that's like my top seven right there.
I think I'm with you on that. And Kyle talked about this a little bit pre-show. We were in the same spot. Let me ask you this. Outside of that, right, you're looking at Nick Chubbs, you're looking at Najee Harris's, you're looking at DeAndre Swift's. Tell me I'm crazy for wanting DeAndre Swift over Najee Harris next year.
No, you're not crazy at all because, you know, as we saw with the Steelers this year, the volume's great. Kyle, can you pull where the Steelers rank in yards per carry this season?
So how about this? I got a bunch of things that I had Kyle pull from me at the beginning of the show. Fantasy points per game. Najee Harris is running back 9, 18 points per game.
Yep.
DeAndre Swift is running back 10, 17.1 points per game. How about this, though? Fantasy points per touch. DeAndre Swift is running back 8, averaging 0.97 points per touch. If he touches the football, he's basically getting you a fantasy point.
Yep.
Najee Harris is RB24 at 0.79. That is the efficiency that we're talking about. I don't see this Lions team getting much better. I see them still being in a spot next year where they're going to have to throw the ball and utilize DeAndre Swift a lot like they did this year. Najee Harris, what's that team going to look like next year without potentially Big Ben at quarterback? And like you're saying,
it's where it gets scary, right?
Volume is king, but he's got volume now and he's not super efficient with it. So I'm having a hard time figuring out where I want Najee because of that volume is up there, but his floor and ceiling could be so different based on who his quarterback is.
By the way, Kyle notes that they're 30th, the Steelers are in yards per carry. So he has a lot of volume, but it's not good.
That's awful.
So a couple names that I have forgotten, one that I think is obvious that we talked about earlier, Javonte Williams, right? If Melvin Gordon goes elsewhere, then Javonte Williams certainly has to be considered right in the thick of this conversation, some way, shape, or form. And then, and this is a tougher one, like, what do you do with Cam Akers, right? Like, this time last year, he was being discussed as a top 10 pick, but Daryl Henderson's been effective for them. Sony Michel's going to be a free agent, but if they've retained Sony Michel, are they going to want to run a guy coming off of an Achilles tear into the ground? J.K. Dobbins, same question there. What do the Ravens do? Like, they still love Gus Edwards. Lamar Jackson's still going to get his.
I can't imagine J.K. Dobbins being a guy that's understanding what that Ravens offense is. I love J.K. Dobbins, but the way that Lamar has to run, the way they utilize multiple running backs, I don't see him being a top-tier running back in fantasy.
Yeah, that we'll see. I think the big question with him is the same one that we asked coming into the season was, are they going to throw the ball enough to the running back? Because if you don't...
We don't know from this year.
We don't know, right. We still don't. I mean, I think Devontae Freeman's been more effective in the passing game than probably we would have guessed, but the fact that Devontae Freeman's contributing at all is more impressive and unexpected relative to what we could have guessed. There are others, of course, David Montgomery's, James Robinson types, Antonio Gibson, who could finish strong. He carved up the Cowboys last year, who he plays twice down the stretch. Those are some of the names that come to mind. But I think it's an interesting conversation too, Daniel, about what does the non-running back off the board first conversation look like? Is Travis Kelce still there?
15.8 points per game this year.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome for a tight end, pedestrian for Travis Kelce's career.
I think he was at 20-plus points last year, so you're down 5 points. That's the question you have
to ask. I don't think that you're taking a guy that is getting you 15.8 points per game, even at a tight end position where we've had Mark Andrews and Darren Wallers, potentially Kyle Pitts, but you know, coming on hopefully next year. We'll see what happens with TJ Hockenson and some of the other guys. If Travis Kelce is not clear cut above those guys, no, he's not a first round pick for me next year. And this year he hasn't been.
Yeah, he might be close for me. And it sort of depends. I think probably the big caveat that we should have introduced right at the beginning of this conversation is, like, this assumes no player movement, which is a dumb thing to assume because a ton of guys are going to change places. There are guys in this list that we're discussing right now who are free agents. Like, those names are going to have a dramatic impact on where we rank players. Obviously, the rookie class. By the way, is the first draft come out today? Or is it?
First draft comes out today.
Yeah, we did it. We recorded the first draft podcast yesterday. The great Mel Kiper Jr., Todd McShay, and myself, which that will be available today. And that's your little intro into the 2022 draft class. There's not this year a Trevor Lawrence. There's really not even like a Najee Harris type. There's not necessarily a Jamar Chase or Kyle Pitts. So for fantasy, it might be a slightly lower year, but you get a really good running back in an ideal location next year. Like, if Miami used a second round pick at the top of the board on a running back, you'd be fired up because they need a running back so badly right now. Kyle, I saw something over there. What do you got?
No, I'm toying this. I think Kelce's still a first rounder.
I think he is too. He's on right in the periphery. Crazy. Maybe.
Well, if you're not putting him there, then you're telling me there's a few receivers ahead of him, which I'm willing to understand, but which receiver's bulletproof in the first round? Devontae Adams might not have Aaron Rodgers next year.
I think Cooper Kupp's the only one.
Yeah.
And even then, if they bring everybody back, you've got three weapons, and you've got Cam Akers, and you've got Higbee, and there's only so many miles to feed.
I think that, but what's going to happen with Cooper Kupp is that, you know, when you're building your ranks, certainly you want to, as best you can, make it a process versus result, like a process-driven exercise. All these indicators that Cooper Kupp has are just so ridiculous right now, right? At the same time, he's putting up an historical season that's going to be really hard to replicate no matter how well he plays next year. Second of all, it's going to feel like the default thing. It's going to feel like, hey, you're just ranking Cooper Kupp because he was so good last year. Like, this is not the same thing as Michael Thomas a couple of years ago, but I think it has some interesting parallels in the sense that, like,
yeah.
I ranked Michael Thomas number one amongst my wide receivers the year after, in part because I was like, how could I possibly argue against him? Like, what is the counterpoint? He just had the best season for a wide receiver in terms of catches ever. Really interesting conversation about Cooper Kupp this upcoming offseason. Do you think we learned anything about quarterbacks?
Yes. What we learned, I was talking with Kyle about this last night. What we learned is, I don't know when the first quarterback is going to be taken, but I'm going to take mine after that.
And who is the first quarterback taken next
year? I don't know.
Who is it? Seriously, let's go around the room without, like, I think my guess is the first quarterback taken next year will be Josh Allen. Okay. Kyle,
who do you think? I would agree with that. Kyler's probably close for me, but yeah, Josh Allen.
But the Kyler thing is, like, he better keep up what happened this past week, which again, I think will come close to it. But if he has just like an average finish to the season, who knows, right? And by the way, again, we all love the season so much, but I cannot wait for the quarterback carousel this offseason. It's going to be nuts. It's going to be nuts.
Aaron Rodgers potentially on the move. Rodgers could be on the move.
Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson, obviously. The Steelers are going to have to change quarterbacks this offseason. The Saints might change quarterbacks this offseason. You know, there are a bunch of teams.
Is Matt Ryan still under contract for...
He is.
Okay.
You know, he's probably a good quarterback to put in that mix if they stick by him. Jalen Hurts could be an interesting one, right?
Oh,
just
yeah.
Because, like, the floor he offers as a runner certainly is significant, and they could upgrade around him this offseason.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, other than Matthew Stafford and Tom Brady, though, everybody else inside that top 10, I think we have gone past the point. Fantasy football has evolved now. Going forward, if you don't have some kind of rushing ability, you have got to be so good as a pass catcher. Even guys like Justin Herbert, and our director just got in my ear because he wants to make sure that we mention Justin Herbert.
Great call.
But also,
great call, Brian.
A guy that just uses his legs. You don't have to run for 60 yards a game to be able to deliver, you know, an extra couple fantasy points to fantasy managers. 25 yards rushing for a quarterback is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, the tides have changed compared to previous years, right? It's
absolutely
crazy. You know, Dak Prescott no longer running. Kyler wasn't until last week. It's an interesting conversation.
What about the rookie quarterbacks from this year? Do you think there's anybody that you see? It's so hard to have a take because they haven't played enough. We haven't seen enough from them. It's going to be hard to rank them as guys that I'm feeling super confident going into next year.
Yeah, I think we probably all agree that, like, the quarterback with the most promise in real life is Mac Jones, right? Yep. Like,
but he's got to rank like fifth in fantasy potential, maybe.
As I was going to say, I would think that amongst rookies, he'll probably be the third or fourth, right? Like, I think that going into next year, Trevor hasn't run hardly at all this year. And I think he'll rank behind Trey Lance and Justin Fields and ahead of Zach Wilson and probably Trevor Lawrence, unless they do big, big things this offseason in terms of their pass catchers. So it's my guess.
Lance has to be the guy, right?
I think so, because they showed so much willingness to run him in that one start, but it's going to be a complete unknown. Like, he's a complete wild card next
year.
I have no idea. Remember, he was like lighting up training camp, but like, I learned a lot of lessons again this year during the pre-draft process and preseason about like what matters and what doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, it is so apparent and obvious that preseason and training camp matter or they don't.
Yeah.
You know, like,
it's so hard because it's like we put so much stock into it, but then it's like Antonio Gibson's a great example.
Sure. But like, if you just go back to practices, remember there were like the two practices that I think were probably the most discussed this offseason. There was one practice where Justin Fields, I think they were having joint practices with the Cowboys, maybe the Bears and Cowboys. Yeah. The Bears and somebody were having a joint practice, and it was like this great period from Justin Fields, and Chicago, justifiably so, went nuts, and it was like, we've got our guy, right? And then the season comes around and Justin Fields is going to get there, and I understand there's some infrastructure issues, and I understand that they have, you know, he's dealt with injuries, but like, when he played, it was not like Justin Fields looked like the second coming of Patrick Mahomes. No. Right? Meanwhile, when Cam Newton has that excused absence because of a medical appointment, and there was that COVID situation where he couldn't practice for 5 days, the Patriots had a joint practice with somebody as well, and Mac Jones lights the world on fire, and it was like, holy cow, like, I felt like the turning point, and it's looked like it's legit, right? Like, so I don't know how much weight to put or not put in some of these joint practices or some of these preseason showings, so it's going to be a really interesting one. My guess would be, assuming they're all starters, my guess would be Trey Lance 1, Justin Fields 2, Mac Jones 3, but Mac might be like somewhere between like 15 and 20.
I think I'm with you.
Yeah, but I think Trey Lance and Justin Fields could be like 8 to 10.
Trey Lance's offense is just better than Justin Fields, and I like the pieces that he has around him more.
Yeah, and we are assuming in these, by the way, that like Kyle Shanahan is going to let him run a lot,
correct,
which he might not. We'll see.
Yeah. Kyle, what you got?
Well, you just never know with rookies in these practice sessions, too. Jamar Chase couldn't catch a cold in preseason.
Great call,
and he was
right?
The best receiver,
no idea. Yeah.
For a month and a half.
I want to ask you one quick question, and I want to talk about these rookie wide receivers before we close the show, but I there's a guy that I forgot to mention that I'd like to ask you about.
Sure.
What do you do with Robert Woods? What's the contract structure for both Van Jefferson
and
OBJ?
Around. OBJ is just signed through this year.
Just this year. So he might leave next year.
Yep, he could be gone. I think if you're OBJ, you probably want a more prominent role in your offense.
Yep.
Van Jefferson's on a rookie deal. He's got two more years after this, so he's sticking around. Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp have pretty similar deals. I think Woods might expire 1 year to Kupp's, but the way they did it, I think it was like 4 for 72 for Robert Woods, and it was like 4 for 70 for Cooper Kupp, which... Wow.
That's a great deal for Cooper Kupp.
Great deal, right? It's a great deal. You're right. So I think I feel pretty confident Robert Woods coming into the season. He'll still be in like that top 15 mix for me.
Okay.
Assuming like this is assuming a normal trajectory returning from the ACL tear, which he's been gone for like 5 weeks now. Wouldn't surprise me if he's back by the preseason, like training camp.
Do you think if the Rams go deep that OBJ tries to stay? Like, that's my only question. Are there going to be four wide receivers in this offense? Because, like you said, there's still Cam Akers and Daryl Henderson that are running the ball there and Tyler Higbee.
I got to figure OBJ is saying to himself, like, this is probably my last best big bite at the apple. Like,
make a big name for myself here again.
Go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Like, if by the way, like, that market might be a little bit depressed if they don't make a deep run. Like, if they fizzle out and they lose in the first round of the playoffs, it might be like, eh. OBJ, I'm not sure, you know, like if he couldn't make a decided impact on that offense, can he do it for us? Counterpoint is if you're a team and Chris Godwin becomes available and you miss out on Chris Godwin or Michael Gallup or some of those other wide receivers who are scheduled to be free agents, OBJ might not be a bad contingency plan for you.
Not bad. All right, couple more here real quick. Kyle Pitts.
Yeah, got over better days here.
Was drafted 50th overall this last year.
Crazy.
That's too high.
Too high last year.
How do you not have a market correction of you devalue him too much, knowing that he's still a great player? He's just not getting the looks in this offense.
Bank on a few things. First of all, you bank on the fact that like he himself is going to be more improved. The biggest jump for players frequently in the NFL is rookie to sophomore season. You have a full off season. You understand what you're doing. You know the nuances of the pro game much more than you did coming into your career. Atlanta is one of those teams that I've got earmarked as like, I have no idea what they do about this offseason.
Yeah.
You could tell me that they're trading Matt Ryan away, or you could tell me that they are sort of running it back. Their cap situation is perilous. Again, going forward, just a very complicated roster for their GM, Terry Fontenot, to navigate. But I think I'm going to end up probably being a sucker for all the good that I know Kyle Pitts has to offer.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I think I just am, because if he reaches his apex, he could be the best tight end in fantasy going forward. Could be.
Let's talk about a couple wide receivers really quickly, and this will be the end of the show, that were drafted outside the top 50.
Okay.
I think they're going to be guys that we're keeping an eye on a little bit closer this next year.
Yep.
Ja'Marr Chase, Kyle already mentioned him, was taken 78th overall. Obviously, Ja'Marr Chase has cooled down a little bit down the stretch here. However, he looks like a legit number one, long time, set it and forget it, wide receiver for Joe Burrow. He's a guy that I think will be in that top 10 wide receiver group next year. Is that fair?
It is. And Ja'Marr Chase reminded me of a player that I should have introduced in that conversation for the number one wide receiver, the number one player that's not a running back to come off the board. I'll get back to that thought in a second. But yes, with Ja'Marr Chase, like, for him to be this special this soon in this offense that still has two other really good wide receivers, like, I think it just speaks volume to just how ridiculously talented he is. He's talked recently about the ability and the need to adjust to, like, you know what happens when you are like, the Kool-Aid guy, like, busting through the wall? That's like him, like, as a rookie. Just like, busting through. Like, you know what happens? You get a bunch of double teams. He's like, I got to figure out how to navigate those more than I knew earlier on in my career.
Yeah.
He'll be special. But let me throw a name out there, and I think the masses will probably agree with this one. The potential number one player that's not a running back to come off the board next year, Justin Jefferson. Like, this dude's doing ridiculous stuff.
I was going to say that too. I didn't want to go back and be mad at you, but I saw him at the bottom of this page. I just
good Lord, I forgot. He's wide receiver 3 right now. He's wide receiver 4 in total points. He came into the league last year, and that was with a slow start last year. Like, he's ridiculous. Like, he's about to, I think, break a tie with OBJ for the second most 100-yard games in your first two seasons ever. He's got a chance at becoming the player with the most receiving yards in his first two seasons ever. He's special, and Kirk Cousins has played well this year, but it's not like Justin Jefferson's playing with Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers right now. Like, this offense sometimes is a painful watch. I love that guy, man. He's still, I think he's like 22 still.
Yeah,
he's absurd.
So young.
So young.
Absurd. He could be my number one player off the board that's not a running back next year.
I like Jalen Waddle a lot this year. He's looked really good, but I want to mention Deebo Samuel, who definitely...
Crazy.
I mean, we were waiting. We saw Brandon Ayuk at the end of last year. We were wondering, what's this offense going to look like with both of them? Deebo looks like a superstar this year.
Yeah, the tricky part, and I love him, the trickier part about a player like Deebo, or Cooper Kupp for that matter, in like doubling down on them in back-to-back years is just the idea that like, okay, up to this point in his career, Cooper Kupp was this. And then he has this massive leap this year. Is that strictly because of the quarterback, or is it like, you know, some circumstances?
Yeah.
Deebo, it's not a new quarterback, but it's like, has the light switch flipped for them and all of a sudden they know how to utilize him better? Whereas Justin Jefferson, it's like, hold on, he's doing this right out of the gates. Like, he could just be continuing to rise and rise and rise in his career.
Yeah. Field, what shirt are you wearing today?
This is from Roback.
Roback.
Yeah. It's a, one of my favorite brands, Roback. They're my guys.
I'm wearing a Lake St. Daniel shirt. Shout out to my buddy Daniel. And everybody that's in Future Teens or the Lake St. Daniel family, that whole Boston music scene. I went to go see them a couple weeks ago for my birthday, actually. I saw Valley Heart and Lake St. Daniel, and it was a ton of fun. So go check out Lake St. Daniel on Spotify if you have not listened to them at all. Fantastic.
Next year, I want your top Spotify options to be the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast and Lake St. Daniel. Your homework is officially issued. It's December 8th. You have your homework for all of 2022. Hey,
Field, my Fantasy Focus Football Podcast wasn't in my top five. I download, but I don't listen. But I download to make sure we get the impression.
We get the impression.
I listen to it here, and then there's all the other stuff. Yeah.
Totally.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Daniel Dopp will never be back on the show again. Just kidding. We're back tomorrow. It'll be a great Thursday podcast. Mike will be here to do wide receiver cornerback previews, plus a Steelers and Vikings matchup look ahead for Daniel and Kyle. Great fun today. I always appreciate them. And we look forward to 2022 already. We're back on Thursday. We'll talk to you then.
Don't forget to love each other. Peace out.
If you need a stick of Tide, Field is your guy. If you're in Bristol or in Farmington, you should find another ride. Candidly, he hates Mike Clay, and you know that it's a fact. Every Yater's gonna Yate, 'cause he's on TV every day. A spicy tomato who's got the stats and tweets that'll make you laugh. He's our favorite host, and everybody knows.